I've been advised the person, the technician recording the talk, is leaving at 5, so we need to try to keep to time as much as possible. Otherwise, the last person won't get recorded. So our first speaker is Umer Noor, speaking about Haiku squared physics of Hera.
Okay, so it's my pleasure to be giving a talk on Haiku squared physics results at Hera on behalf of the Zeus and H1 collaborations. For the table of contents, you can follow this bar at the top. I'll start by talking about deep inelastic scattering at Hera. I'll show you the newest neutral current and charge current cross sections at Haiku squared. Next will be electro weak and QCD fits. And finally, H1 and Zeus combination. Right, Hera is the world's only electron-proton or positron-proton collider. Here is an aerial shot at the location in Hamburg, Germany, under which the 6-kilometer-long Hera tunnel exists. So here we have electrons or positrons accelerated one way up to 27.5 GeV, and protons are accelerated the other way up to 920 GeV. There are two interaction points here and here, leading to a center of mass energy of 320 GeV. So Hera can be thought of as a super microscope. So to explain why, I've got a sketch here, a simple sketch showing an electron scattering off a proton by the exchange of a photon. Here, Q squared is the momentum transfer squared. So you'll see as the electron is scattered to a larger angle of the proton, Q squared increases, which means that we can resolve the constituents inside the proton to a finer level. And the reason for this is that Q squared corresponds to the spatial resolution of the probe. Wavelength lambda is approximately equal to 1 over q, and the maximum q squared is set by the center of mass energy. So we can get a wavelength down to 10 to the minus 18 meters, so about 1,000 times smaller than the radius of the proton. These are the multi-purpose collider detectors at Hera. We have H1 located here, and Zeus is located here. Both these experiments are about the size of a three-story building. And here we have event displays showing actual events taken by these detectors. So in both these pictures, we have the electron coming in from the left and the proton coming in from the right. And both detectors are somewhat centered around this interaction region. So the outer shell for both detectors correspond to calorimetry. For Zeus, it's a compensated uranium calorimeter, and for H1, it's a liquid argon calorimeter. So these red squares correspond to measured energy deposits. The central regions correspond to tracking and vertex detectors. So you can see the reconstructed tracks by these purple and blue lines. Okay, so this plot on the left shows basically shows the amount of data collected at Hera, showing the integrated luminosity collected by H1 versus days of running. So in 2000, there was a major luminosity upgrade for the Hera accelerator. So the pre-upgrade accelerator is known as Hera 1, and after the upgrade, it's called Hera 2. And by the slope of this line shows you how successful this luminosity upgrade was. The blue lines correspond to electron-proton scattering, and the red lines correspond to positron-proton scattering. And at the very end of Hera 2, there was a dedicated low-energy one to measure the longitudinal structure function FL. And this point right here is where Hera ceased operating on the 1st of July 2007. So if you add up the data collected by H1 and SUS, we're looking at approximately one inverse picobar, one inverse femtobar of data. This is a sketch of the Hera ring and the location of the two collider experiments. So as the electron goes around the ring, the transverse polarization builds up naturally through the Solokov turnover effect. In Hera 2, spin rotators were installed before and after the two collider detectors, providing longitudinally polarized leptons for the first time. And this polarization is calculated by taking the number of right-handed and left-handed leptons in the beam. Right, this is the deep inelastic scattering process at Hera. We have an electron or a positron scattering off a proton, and the momentum transfer is large enough such that the proton breaks up. In the case where a photon or a Z0 is exchanged, it's called a neutral current, and the final state lepton remains the same, so either positron or electron. If a charged W boson is exchanged, then we call this charge current, and the final state lepton is a neutrino or antineutrino. Here are three kinematic variables used to describe deep inelastic scattering. Q squared is the probing power, X is the momentum fraction of the struck quark, and Y is the energy fraction transferred from a lepton in a proton's press frame. So here is a neutral current event as seen in the Zeus detector. I have two views of the event display. This one here, the beam pipe is coming through the page. And as before, in this event display, the electron comes in from the left and the proton comes in from the right. So the main signature for a neutral current event is the detection of a scattered electron, shown here. And also, the event is well balanced in transverse momentum. I'll be talking about the reduced neutral current cross-section in this talk, which is basically the double differential cross-section multiplied by some kinematic factors, such that you can simply see these structure functions. F2 is the dominant contribution to the reduced cross-section, and it's proportional to the sum of the quark and anti-quark densities. So that's effectively your C quarks added to the valence quark distribution. XF3, on the other hand, contains only contributions due to pure Z exchange and gamma Z, photon Z interference, not pure photon exchange. So therefore, we're only sensitive to this at Hera, high Q squared. XF3 is proportional to the difference of the quark and anti-quark densities. So this is approximately equal to the valence quark distribution. And finally, we have FL, which we are sensitive to at high Y and low Q squared, and is proportional to the gluon content. Onto the charge current events. Here is one taken by the H1 detector. So the main signature here is missing energy. You see in this event display here, there's an obvious imbalance in the transverse momentum. And that's due to the final state neutrino leaving the detector without leaving trace. Here I'm showing the double differential cross section for electron proton scattering, and below it for positron proton scattering. So the major points here is that both cross sections have a linear dependence on the polarization of the lepton beam. And also, both cross sections are proportional to certain quark or anti-quark densities. So therefore, if you're scattering electrons of protons, you'll be sensitive to the U quark, the U valence quark. And if you're scattering positrons of protons, you'll be sensitive to the D valence quark. So what we're seeing here is a flavor-dependent probe of the proton structure. On to some results. Here are the unpolarized cross-sections for neutral current and charge current cross-sections. Here is the single differential cross section with respect to Q squared versus Q squared. The blue icons correspond to neutral current cross sections, and the red icons correspond to charge current cross sections. And these lines correspond to the theoretical prediction. So you can see how our measurements are beautifully described by the standard model over six orders of magnitude. At low Q squared, the neutral current cross section is much larger than the charge current cross section due to the massless photon exchange. But as we increase in Q squared, we become sensitive to the massive Z boson contribution. And at the highest Q squared, we see electroweak unification as the neutral current and charge current cross sections become similar. This is the charge current cross section versus the polarization of electron beam. So here the red icons correspond to measurements by Heitmann and Zeus of electron proton scattering, and in blue is positron proton scattering. So as I mentioned before, there's a linear dependence of a cross section on the polarization, and this is quite evident in the measurements made at Keck. In fact, you can extrapolate the measurements to a polarization of plus 100% or minus 100%, and we see no evidence of right-handed currents. This is the neutral current polarization asymmetry. So to measure this quantity, we need to extract cross sections using different polarization states. And here I've denoted them as PR for a positive polarization and PL for a negative polarization. And at HERA was typically delivering plus or minus 30%. So this asymmetry is proportional to the ratio of the difference in sum of these cross sections. And this plus or minus is showing you the charge of the incoming electron, so either a positron or an electron. And here are the results, the symmetry versus Q squared. This is a H1 plus Zeus combined plot, just to give a better statistical precision. So if we thought parity violation didn't exist, then the asymmetry would just be zero of the entire kinematic plane. But instead, we're clearly seeing that the asymmetry is not equal to zero. And this is the first evidence of parity violation in neutral current electron proton scattering at high Q squared. Okay, on to electroweak and QCD fits. I'll start by describing the structure of the proton. So here I have a succession of plots of the quark density versus the momentum fraction x, where this quark density is the probability that a quark carries momentum fraction x. And superimposed is a simple picture of the proton and the structures we can see inside it. So if the wavelength of the probe is larger than the proton, then our quark density will just be one. We'll just see a single particle. But as the wavelength of the probe decreases, we're able to see the three valence quarks, and this peak at one of the three is smeared due to the interactions between the quarks. And at the highest resolutions, we're able to see the C quarks, which dominate the low X region. So these quark densities are known as parton density functions, and these PDFs are extracted from fixed data. So the structure of the proton, it depends on the resolution due to processes like these. And this is described by the Dirac evolution equations. So we have the Q squared dependence, but the X dependence has to come from beta. Then we have a kinematic plane plot, so Q squared versus X. In blue is the region which the LHC will be able to measure at. And green shows HERA. So you can see HERA covers a very important region for the LHC. we can measure PDFs in this region and then evolve them in Q-squared into a central region for the LHC. And future physics at the LHC will require reliable PDFs to describe the proton structure. So just to give you a taster of some of the cross-sections used for fitting, I'll start with this plot on the left. This is the plot that Harry is most famous for. It's the structure function F2 multiplied by a constant versus Q squared. And it's shown in fixed bins of X going from very low X to very high X. The points in black are from fixed time data experiments. And in red and blue are the Harry experiments. So you can see scaling violation is beautifully described by the data. You see this rise in F2 at low X and a dip at high X. These measurements give us access to the low XC, and the shape of F2 with Q squared gives us the determination of the gluon PDFs. The plots on the right are the reduced cross sections at high Q squared. So these are in the highest two fixed Q squared bins versus X. The empty circles correspond to electron proton scattering. The filled circles are positron proton scattering. And you see as you go to higher Q squared, these two lines diverge. And the reason for this is XF3, which you can extract from these measurements by simply taking the difference. And here we have XF3 versus X in these same Q squared bins. And XF3 is proportional to the difference of the quark and anti-quark density. So you're also getting an access to the valence quarks. The structure functions F2 and XF3 depend on the vector and axial vector couplings of the electrons and quarks to the Z boson. So you can leave the light quark couplings to the Z03 in a fit and then extract the vector and axial vector couplings. This is what I'm showing here, a VU versus AU. The measurements made by Zeus and H1 are in blue and purple. So you can see that our results are very competitive with the Teletron and NET results. Our measurements are more precise than the present measurements by CDF and also resolves this ambiguity in the LEP results. Onto the PDF fits. Here are the PDFs versus X. The black lines and yellow band correspond to the Zeus PDF. And in blue and green are the H1 PDFs, which are fitted using their own data. Just to compare, this red line is the CTEC PDF, which isn't constrained to just one experiment, it's a global fit. So here we're seeing the U valence and B valence quarks populating the high X region, and the gluon and C dominating this low X region. In fact, they're scaled down by a factor of 20 just to fit on this plot. The plots on the right show the fractional uncertainty in the valence quarks, the C, and the gluon at a fixed Q squared value. What I'm comparing is the Zeus PDF with this new Zeus Pol PDF, which includes the new polarized data from HERA 2. So that's approximately 100 inverse picobar more data. So you can see that the uncertainties are definitely improved for the U valence at high X using this new data. And finally, on to combining data. So H1 and Zeus collaborations are very active at the moment at combining our DIS results. Combining DIS results. So full error correlations are taken into account into this combination. And also using the assumption that H1 and Zeus are measuring the same cross-sections at the same kinematic variables. leads to both experiments cross-calibrating each other. Therefore, there's a substantial reduction in the uncertainties, and they're improved by more than a simple square root of 2 in some regions. This is highlighted in the plot here, the reduced cross-section for mutual current scattering versus Q-squared in two fixed exponents. Here I've blown up a small region, showing you in red and blue the H1 and Zeta points, and in black this combined data set. And for my final plots, using the combined H1 and Zeus data, you can fit a HERA1 PDF. So here I'm comparing this HERA1 PDF in yellow with global fits, CTEC and MRST, which aren't constrained to just one experiment. The bands correspond to the uncertainty, so you can obviously see the impressive precision compared to global fits. Right, to summarize, HERA is providing a significant test to the electroweak model and improving our knowledge of the proton structure. I've shown you no evidence for the right-handed charge current, and the first time a parity violation has been observed at neutral current deep in I6 scattering, a high Q-squared. We can make a competitive determination of the light path couplings for Z0, and improvements to the PDF uncertainties are being made through new HERA2 data and through combining H1 and Zeus results. So the final word from HERA is still to come, and we look forward to the analysis of the complete HERA data, approximately 1 verse 31. Thanks.
So next we have Rob Mann talking about cosmic rays through the Higgs boson.
How do I connect this to the
I'm it, so I can tease it.
All right.